Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
Vic Sport, in partnership with Swinburne University and Vic Health, are hosting the Rainbow Participation in Sport event on International Day Against LGBTQIA Plus Discrimination, or Ida Hobbit Day. It'll launch one of the first Australian studies to document participation rates of young rainbow people in sport and the prevalence of discrimination across sport and movement settings. Dr. Ryan Storey is a research fellow in the Sport Innovation Research Group at Swinburne University of Technology, joins us. Ryan, welcome back to Drive.
Hi there, thanks for having me again.
What are the key findings and some stats?
So two key kind of broad areas that we looked at in this specific report. The first one was around participation rates. So we don't actually know how many LGBTIQA plus people participate and play sport. So across the board of the sample that we looked at, 47% were registered to a sport club in 2019 to 2020, but then that dropped to only 37% and 33% in terms of social and competitive sport. Mm-hmm. So there's been a drop off since COVID, but more concerning is in terms of when we look at the separate aspects of it. Only 15% of gay men participate, 15% of lesbian women, 8% of queer and 9% of bisexual people participate in sport. So they're really quite low numbers from a participation perspective. And then the prevalence of discrimination. So the last major study that people will often see cited was Out in the Fields, which was 2014. And that showed about 85% of LGBTIQA plus people had witnessed or experienced discrimination. Now, it's gone down to about 53%, which is encouraging in the respect of over a 10-year period. And obviously, there's been lots of work happening. But I think one of the main things that stands out to me is that within gay men in particular, witnessing homophobia is still at 76%. So the data shows that. Yeah, the data shows that it's male sport environments that are the most problematic.
You've worked in this space for decades. Are you surprised by the findings?
Participation rates, no. We've always known because of discrimination and having co-founded Proud to Play, we know it's hard to get LGBTIQA plus people to play and engage in sport because there's so many barriers and just that toxic environment. With the discrimination, I'm glad to see it's gone down, but I'm still a bit shocked at that figure at 76% in terms of the male environments and gay men in particular. I thought it would have gone down a bit, but then when we think about, and I was speaking to you only a couple of weeks ago around the homophobic vilification from the Port Adelaide player, I think actually it's probably reflective of the environments that we see across sport, especially men, and we need to think about the gender-based violence epidemic that's happening as well. So I think these male sport environments and links to masculinity and things like that are causing this kind of stubbornness around homophobia in particular.
It's as you're talking and you mentioned sort of those male sporting environments, and I mean, you know, I'm a gay male and I would love to participate more in sport, and I tend to do stuff like on my own because I feel safer doing it on my own and there's not that risk. And as you said it, I could just feel myself cringing, going, oh, I couldn't think of anything worse than going into a, you know, male-dominated sport environment. I mean, it doesn't take much, does it? I know I'm speaking for me and I know I'm not speaking for everyone, but a lot of us have bad experiences with sport. It doesn't take much to scare us away, does it?
No, and that's one of the problems is that so we also did some focus groups with young people, 16 to 25, and some of the young people we spoke to could speak very, very vividly about incidents that had happened to them as kind of young people and the impact it had. It only takes one comment, one incident to have a long life impact on it. And that's why even one small thing, it doesn't have to happen repeatedly every week. It can just be one small thing that can absolutely switch people off. And when we think there's so many barriers anyway, to kind of sport participation in those environments, we need to try and think about how we reduce the barriers. And there's still a long way to go around it. And I think sports need to really identify that this is not a problem that is going to go away, because it doesn't just impact LGBT people. I did some previous research which showed that 50% of non-LGBT people had witnessed or experienced homophobia. So it has an impact on them as well. So it's not just something that impacts our communities, it actually impacts everybody, because it's used as a tool to try and police gender and discriminate and things like that.
Which is good to know, because we often think it is just us, isn't it? I think, oh no, it's just me because I'm a gay male, they won't accept me. But it's not. You see this behaviour and other people think, why would I want to be associated with that sort of sport?
Yeah, and especially when I've done research in women's sport environments, often it can be really used as a tool to kind of cause harm, because they might suggest that women or girls are lesbians if they play sport, for example, which is the complete opposite end of the spectrum for men. And in the in our focus groups, we did actually hear that. And what I remember one story, a young girl saying that somebody had basically suggested that she not play AFL because she would become a lesbian. And you hear so many things like that. I've heard that in cricket as well. Mums and daughters don't want to send their daughters to play cricket or other sports like that because they'll turn into a lesbian. And I'm kind of like,
oh my goodness, I can't believe it just sounds so ridiculous, doesn't it? To think that someone thinks because you play something it's going to turn you into a lesbian.
Yeah, find me a cricket bat that does that, because I feel like it'd be worth a lot of money.
Oh my goodness! Imagine if you could reverse it as well. You could switch between whatever you want it to be. It is tongue in cheek, of course. We're chatting with Dr. Ryan Storr, research fellow in the Sport Innovation Research Group at Swinburne University of Technology, about one of the first Australian studies to document participation rates of young rainbow people in sport and the prevalence of discrimination. Ryan, what is one recommendation from the research that you believe will significantly improve outcomes for LGBTIQA plus communities through sport and movement?
Look, we've got quite a few recommendations, but a couple of the key ones are that youth sport and school sport seems to be very problematic and where a lot of problems happen. We know teenage boys in groups are the main perpetrators of homophobia, and sporting contexts are one of the worst sites for that. So I think in schools and youth sport, there needs to be, from a safeguarding perspective, there needs to be strong anti-homophobia initiatives and programs that are happening to kind of address that. Because as you kind of mentioned before, if young people have negative experiences, it really switches them off from life. So we need to think about prevention in that regard. And another one is around sports organizations committing to doing this work. So whether that, for example, they participate in the Rainbow Roadmap through Pride to Play, they might engage with Pride in Sport and do the Pride in Sport Index. But too many organizations are doing nothing in this area. So what we need to see is sports to make a commitment to start doing this. So not just doing, for example, a Pride game or putting a social media post up once a year. They need to show a commitment within their organization to actually improve outcomes for LGBTIQ plus people. So we kind of saw a good thing in the sense of the AFL giving out a ban for that, to show that that homophobia isn't welcome within sport. So we need to think about what we can do in terms of that broader piece around having policies and things in place to do that. But we need the sports to commit to do this work, because unfortunately they might do other areas of diversity, but they're still not doing anything in this space.
Ryan, a little birdie by the name of Jax, who's one of our fabulous assistant producers, says that told me that you play tennis. What's your experience been like in tennis?
So, look, I've been very lucky, and I think that's one of the reasons why I continue to play sport. Tennis in Australia in particular is very good. So they recently just won the Pride in Sport gold status. At the Pride and Sport Awards a couple of days ago, they have the Glam Slam. They have things happening at like a Pride Day at the Australian Open. They have things throughout the year. So as an organization, they make efforts, and it really shows. And I think the culture within tennis is really supportive. I've been down to Vic Tennis, which is the LGBT tennis club. Everyone's very friendly. The tournaments we play in and things like that are all done in great spirits. So I think that's an important one, because that kind of shows me that the people in my sport and the governors of the game want me to be included, whereas in other sports I definitely, I think I wouldn't play it out of principle, because I'm not confident that they're doing everything in their power to ensure that people like myself as a gay man do not kind of come into homophobia. So some sports are better than others, but I think there's a big gap. Like the ones who do it well, like Tennis Australia, are really out there and are really good, but then the ones who aren't doing anything are really quite poor. And I think there's just a big gap in the middle where you're either doing it or you're not. And unfortunately, there's too many in the basket who aren't doing anything, or when they do things at like a pride game and things like that. And it's not to say that pride games are bad, they're great. But one pride game is not going to solve systemic homophobia within certain sporting codes.
It's almost tokenistic in some ways. I also think, Ryan, we also have to hold a mirror up to ourselves as well. I mean, there are, and certainly in my experience, there are some rainbow sporting organisations that might have an emphasis too much on performance or certain ages or body or something like that. And I think we also need to make sure when we're in the sporting space, we welcome others that come on board as well.
Yeah, absolutely, especially for trans and gender diverse people. Yes. There's a lot of work to be done around that, because often many of the sports clubs are very cis gay men focused. And even there's efforts to try and engage more women and girls in particular within some of the sports, and accessibility perspective and culture and linguistically diverse people. So absolutely. So I think if we want to kind of move forwards, then we need to do the inclusion work within our own clubs, and I think there's a lot of work that can be done around that. And I know there has been some good starts in the space. So for example, when Sydney World Pride was on, they gave some grants out to clubs in New South Wales, and part of that grant was to do work to promote inclusion and things for World Pride. But part of it was, for example, they had to do some First Nations work, and they had to do other aspects of inclusion. So it kind of makes them engage with First Nations inclusion and reconciliation and those type of things.
Ryan, I'm really excited because there's an event coming up. I'm going to go along to it, and it's called Rainbow in Sport. Tell us all about that, because I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, so obviously I've just given a few highlights from some of the research that I talked about, but we'll be launching the official report and all the data and information on IdaHobbit. So it's from 9:30 in the morning till about 1. There's food, refreshments, networking afterwards. So my team will present the research for about 40 minutes, and then afterwards it's going to be followed by a panel discussion. So we've got Andy Brennan, Darcy Vessio and Irina Farinacci from Tennis Australia. So we've got some player perspectives, and we've also got an organisational perspective, and we'll kind of have a chat about the results and the data that we've presented and what can be done kind of moving forwards and where the sector's at. So it'll be really insightful. It's open to anyone. People can find more information on the Vic Sport website or social media page, or the Proud to Play social media pages. It's at Icon Park at Carlton Football Club as well. So great location.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it. Ryan, thanks for joining us. Great to chat with you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's Dr. Ryan Storr, Research Fellow in the Sport Innovation Research Group at Swinburne University of Technology.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.